Raj Rawat is the author of the book Find Your Everest Before Someone Chooses It For You. Raj has been a guest before on KGNU as he was a candidate in the recent Boulder Valley School District race. And in fact, his book is very much focused at young people, indeed, well, all people, I suppose, but it's very full of lessons that young people can take on board. And he's our guest today in KGNU. It's good to have you back in the studio.
Thank you, Maeve.
Getting back to the title of the book, Find Your Everest Before Someone Chooses It For You, break that down a little bit. What do you mean by that?
The book came about because I was consulting all around the world and I'd give talks and the audience would come back and say, do you have something you can leave behind and we can remember by? And my talks were really technology-oriented. So I was kind of curious on how this was happening. What they said was they were being inspired because I was telling them stories. And as I started to talk to people who were giving me that feedback, I started to realize that they were all saying, we're doing great work at work, but we're not connected to our passions. That we're working hard, but we're not accomplishing things that really fulfill us. And so that's the reason why I chose the title of Find Your Everest Before Someone Chooses It For You, because people are working hard, they're making progress financially, but they're really not fulfilled. So as an individual, they're not achieving what their personal Everest is.
And what are the implications of that if people are living these unfulfilled lives, albeit maybe they have their material needs met, but if they don't have that passion in their life, what are the implications?
Great question. I'll give you a small anecdotal story. At 65 years old, an executive retired. He'd been extremely successful, and he had all of the money in the world, great family, everything was fine. And he called me up and he said, I'm about to retire and I don't know what to do. In fact, I'm about to retire and I feel depressed that I didn't do any of the things that I really wanted to do in life. And as we chatted, he came in and said, I wish somebody had pushed me when I was 29 years old. Because really, when I look back, at 29, I knew all of those things that I was really good at, but I was afraid to take risks. So he never reached the level of accomplishment and happiness and joy and that passion feeling, that passion voice that says, yes, you're doing exactly what you're built for, because he didn't choose to do that. And because of that, everything you touch, every interaction you have is sub-optimized because you don't encourage people, you don't inspire them to be the level best that they can be. Because if you haven't invested, you also don't live that inspired life. So we miss out so much by not pursuing something that's our passion.
Well, one of the chapters focuses on actually identifying what your goal is. And really, in many ways, you have to be specific. Don't say, I want to be a writer, because that gives you the opt-out of, well, when am I going to write anything? If you're specific, and you do give an example of, I want to write a book of children's stories, well, that's a goal that you can then subsequently achieve. When you talk to people, do you find that people have identified maybe a goal in life, but it's far too vague and there's no specific nature to it, in which case it's harder to achieve?
That's exactly the story, Maeve. The one thing that we must have in our goals is time. By what time will you finish your goal? And so sometimes they're dreaming, other times they're a little bit more specific, but still, if there is a date that's not assigned to that goal, the likelihood of it finished, of finishing it on time, is far less. Now, the American Association for Training and Development did a study that said, when you set a goal and you set a time and you set an appointment with someone to hold yourself accountable, your chances of achieving it are 85 to 90% more. So be specific about your goal and set a time, and then hold yourself accountable by setting a time with somebody to meet and say, I've finished it.
I meet people all the time who say, oh, I've always wanted to go to Europe. I'll go to Europe at some point. And then you say, well, when are you going to go? And there's no idea of when they'll go, when they want to go. It's just this kind of ambiguous dream, I suppose, that they have. And that very much ties into, I think, what you're saying. If you just have a very broad goal or dream or idea, unless you actually set some type of time frame, like, well, I will go within the next 2 years, it's very hard to work up towards that.
Exactly. There is a very specific set of rules that we live by. There are three conditions that we cannot change. These are three realities. One is time. Once lapsed, never returns. Another is energy. We're constantly, we're losing energy. We can recharge, but it depletes. And third is we can only be in one place at one time. So it's really important for us to realize those are the conditions we live in. If we have clear priorities, we will focus on what's important to us. And when those priorities match our passion and our reality, we become unstoppable. And that's the kind of life I'd like for people to live. And that's the reason why the book.
Well, Raj Rawat is our guest today. His book is Find Your Everest Before Someone Chooses It For You. You started off by talking about your experience working in, I suppose, corporations and businesses around the world where you would often work with executives and you'd hear people about to retire really bemoaning the fact that they didn't achieve what they set out to achieve when they were younger. And you know, how to avoid that fate. And so one of the things that you do advocate for is, well, you have to identify what your goal is. And so if we're using Everest as the example, finding your Everest, and there's a project or a set of tasks that you ask people to go through so you can hone into what exactly your dream can be. Can you go through that particular project or the exercise, you call it the island exercise?
Yes. So the island exercise really hones people in on what's important in your life. Who are the people that you would fight for, that you would live for, or you would sacrifice your life for? What are the things that really matter to you? And what are you willing to give up? A lot of people in the first round will not complete the exercise. It's because you have to make difficult decisions. But there is a marked difference when they've read the book and not completed the exercise, and they've read the book and completed the exercise, and you can feel it. And the reason why that exercise is there is to just give you the process to say, this is what you have to do when you have to achieve your Everest. You have to have this level of clarity. If you have to be a champion, you have to work like a champion. So you have to have your goals set like that. And when you identify something that touches your core, there is a significant difference in your body language, in the speed by which you do everything, because you're chasing something that's important to you for a real reason. Very quickly, you find out all the information that exists about it. You're at the edge of knowledge that anybody on the planet has, and everybody is looking at you, but you're enthused because you're curious because it's important to you. The next thing you know, you're in a zone beyond everybody else, and now you're in the zone of innovation. And when you're in that mode, you become the kind of person who sees all kinds of possibilities. Next thing you know, you are innovating, and now you become authentic for your cause. The world comes to you. So you no longer chase. The world chases you because you were particular about what you wanted. You chased it. You led it. You innovated, and now you become the champion for it. And that's what I'm trying to share.
Well, in the island exercise, really, ultimately, the scenario you present is you're in a shipwreck and then you're on an island. And the idea is that you whittle down, who are the people in your life that are most important? What are the objects in your life that are most important? And what are the activities that are most important? And you start off maybe with 10 of each, and then you whittle it down and whittle it down, and then maybe end up with three things that are really most important. And it seems that we are constantly surrounding ourselves by things that really aren't important, particularly objects. We're in a very consumerist society and we seem to surround ourselves with things that, you know what, we could all certainly do without. And there are a lot of people who write about this. If you know, if your house was to burn down, what are the three things that you would grab? This is a very similar exercise. Do you find that we are, just by the nature of being humans and the kind of society that we live in, are surrounding ourselves and paying attention then to things that just aren't important or don't help us further our dreams?
This is exactly the reason why the exercise is there. And I was hesitant a little bit to talk about it in detail because people might feel a little bit challenged. But as I've said in the book, the first time this exercise came up was when our son was in a leadership program. And he was young, and he completely did not participate in this exercise because he said, I'm going to make everything happen. The reality is, life has too many demands, and we only have a fixed amount of energy to do. So we have to be very careful about what we set out to do. And if you go through the exercise, a magical switch turns on, which is, it's really not that hard to do if you embrace this thought that we have to live within these three boundaries. We have to live in the moment. If we live in the moment and we're focused on what's important to us, then everything else falls off. Now we're completely clear about what we have to do. The difference now is we're not chasing instant gratification. Now we're chasing fulfillment. Fulfillment is a long-time sustainable investment. And the difference is you take a sugar pop and you get instant gratification, or you sow a seed and then you nurture the plant. When you nurture the plant, that's the long-term fulfillment and you get returns from it all its life. So that's the kind of approach. And you're exactly right, Maeve. If we look at it and we're careful, we can live lives in that sustained fulfillment state.
In terms of being distracted, it seems modern technology is just aiding and abetting that particular behavioral issue. If you look around, particularly you see young people just glued to a smartphone, glued to a tablet or some type of device. And there are a lot of studies coming out about what's happening neurologically with distraction and the fact that people spend hours and hours, and kids spend hours and hours on screens. That seems to be the opposite of finding something to focus on.
I came out of technology, and I'm a firm believer that technology moves our life forward. However, in order for us to use technology to move forward, we have to be mindful of when we need technology to do what for us. And that is a very slight twist from being consumed by technology to being a consumer of technology to move us forward. And Facebook can be fantastic to stay in touch with people, but it can also consume our time because we're not mindful of what our priority is. So I know that technology will keep advancing and amazing things will happen. In fact, such positive things will come from the advancement of technology. But we have to be informed, and we have to be the people who have to control the direction of it. If we don't pay attention to it, then we become a pinball in somebody else's pinball machine. When we have the capability of designing the game and playing the game, because we are intelligent people and we can decide what's important to us.
We're speaking on KGNU today with Raj Rawat, who is the author of Find Your Everest Before Someone Chooses It For You. Raj is also one of the co-founders of Hanuman Chai, a local company, but he was recently a candidate in the Boulder Valley School District Board of Elections. And I know education is a major interest of yours. And we'll talk about your work with your book in schools. But you mentioned a term, mindfulness, and it seems that that's a buzzword I'm hearing more and more in schools, that we're trying to teach children how to have mindfulness, how to be in the moment and how to be present. And that's also a big component of your book as well.
Maeve, these words keep coming and going. And
it almost seems like there's a word of the day or a word of a month, of the month or something. But I want to focus on the basics. And this book is really about the basics. It's what is your core? What is your reality? And what do you want to do? What do you do when you lose track of time and space, when you forget everything else and you're so connected to what you're doing? That's the important thing. If we know who we are, we can start there and climb the Everest. Climbing the Everest is only putting one step after another in the right direction. And if you do that, then every moment when you've given everything you have to do what you're trying to do is an Everest. So you're living in the moment and you're going to do something that you're feeling passionate about. And now, if you do that, you will have to be mindful. Whatever you call it, you know that your time, energy, your presence, your focus, your attention, everything will be in that moment. And that's what this is about. When I go into meetings now, I make the statement on a regular basis, I am here 100% for you. And it came about because I was speaking to to the largest association of physicians in Las Vegas. And we talked about what was the most important thing for them. And they insisted that they feel completely pressured for time. Every so often they have to cycle the next patient. And so this little script is hanging in New York in many, many offices. It says, hello, my name is Dr. Maeve. I am here 100% for you. I need you to be 100% present for me so that I can do the best job to help you. That's 9 seconds. And I had gotten phone calls back from the doctor saying that my patient showed up with earphones and she wasn't paying attention. And she read that tile and immediately she took that out. And some of the patients have now become long-term friends because when they're there in that moment, it changes their life.
This gets back to the point that we were talking about, how technology in many ways is distracting us, or it can be a wormhole that we fall down. The next thing, hours have gone by and we've just been watching cute cat videos on YouTube or on Facebook. But it's also, I think, very detrimental in many ways to human interaction. And we see, I think we've all been on the receiving end of somebody who's distracted because they're paying attention to their phone rather than having a committed conversation with you. And I often notice this if I'm out in restaurants or out and about, and you see kids or young adults or young people or even adults who are all around the dinner table and everyone's on their own device. And so it seems that nobody is being present in that situation.
What a loss of opportunity, because when we connect, life is all about compassion and uplifting others and inspiring others. And I say this to people all the time. Those people who don't know how to inspire other people to live to their full potential often never live an inspired life themselves, because they don't know how to cross those boundaries and really be who they are. And if they can't inspire other people to do that, they find that they themselves end up living in a box. You know, on the book, I want to share another small story with you. We're talking about science, and a lot of scientists and researchers have read the book. I got a phone call from a fellow who is working on the IBM Watson project. And he said, I read your book. He has a PhD, very bright fellow. He said, I read your book, and I'm so glad that I read it, because 2 weeks before this, I had turned down a huge job with another company. It was equally big name. And when I read the book, I realized I did exactly the right thing, because my job lines up with my values. And then 2 weeks later, he says, IBM offered me the same kind of a job. And so people who are sort of on the edge of technology and they're already champions of what they do, they're calling back to say, hey, this book reaffirms a lot of the good things that I already do. And it reminded me to do a couple things more that I wasn't really focused on. I always kind of knew, but I wasn't quite focused on. And then when the students are reading the book, they're saying, hey, we needed this in the eighth grade because that's when we started to make decisions about our choices. And if I had this in eighth grade, then I would have started to think about my Everests and the system of building an ecosystem around me, a successful ecosystem where I can invest my energy and I can get mentoring back to grow. So yes, technology is there. It's a distraction. But if you think according to some of the foundations in the book, you can use technology to grow and advance.
You mentioned mentoring there, and you have a whole chapter about finding people in your life who will help you succeed with your dreams. And I think there's a mentor, but there are other folks that you identify. And it's really about seeking those people out who will help you. Talk a little bit about the importance of that and maybe your own experience with that.
Yes. My whole life, you can say, is forged by mentors. The first time I left home, I was 8.5 years old, and I had no idea, but I was being sent away from home. And then my grandmother, who was very close to me, said to me, she said, son, I'm going to take you, but I'm going to come back and you're not coming back. That was a shock. And life will throw these curves at you when it'll throw you into oceans that you're not prepared to swim. You just can't do anything about it. A lot of nice stuff comes out of circumstances like this. For me, it was how to learn to survive. When you're in an all-boys school, you have a choice. You can either fight or you can give up and you become a doormat. And in my case, I chose to fight. You start to keep secrets because if you're winning, you don't want to brag about it so that big boys will come and beat you up. If you beat somebody up, you don't want to brag about it because somebody who cares for him will come beat you up. And when you keep secrets, your life evolves because people get hurt because not everything is out in the open. At some point, you make the switch and you realize you've got to be truthful. And when you become truthful, you find you're struggling. People beat you down. You lose. They betray your trust. Still, if you keep fighting, your mentors start to appear because they start seeing somebody who's trying hard but is not being able to bridge the gap. That's when the mentors come. There is a common perception here in our culture that you ask somebody to mentor you and they must mentor you, sort of an entitlement that I asked you to mentor me and you didn't. Well, life works the opposite way. You have to earn the right to be a legitimate candidate for somebody's time and knowledge and wisdom and care and compassion. So if you want that ecosystem, you want to have a mentor who's on the cutting edge of whatever it is that you want to do. You want somebody who knows what's broken in it and fixes it every day, and somebody who has a broad view of that field and can guide you. And so you have somebody who's on an innovation edge, you have somebody who's very creative, and you have somebody who knows the big picture. But if you have the attitude that I'm just going to go ask and somebody is just going to jump in to help me, you won't succeed. What you have to do is figure out what you want to do, what you want mentorship with or for, and then study. You know everything about it that somebody can know by Googling it, by going to the information, by going to sources that are easily available to them. And then you go, I have learned all of this. You're an expert in this. I've read all of the papers you've published, and I have this question. Well, now you've earned the right to ask. And then there's a possibility that that person might help you. But this entitlement mentality that, you know, I asked somebody to mentor me and they didn't, doesn't really work in life.
You mentioned that a lot of people say, I wish I'd read this book in the eighth grade and I wish I had somebody who helped me focus, or I wish I had the focus myself at that point to identify my dreams. I know you have been working in schools and you do work with young people as well as some of those people on the other end of the life experience cycle in terms of those who are retiring. And so what are you hearing and what schools are you working in? Because I know that you were a candidate for the Boulder Valley School District. So yeah. You're very passionate about helping people and children and students in that K through 12 cycle?
Our children grow up in a community Montessori, then Summit Charter School, then Boulder High School. And I also work with CU. The story of a student that I'd like to share with you is about a kid who heard one of my talks at an event at CU, and he wrote me a 4-page email. It was about the B-52 that I talk about in the book. And I have this question about, what's your B-52? B-52, of course, is U.S. Air Force's strongest, heaviest weight-carrying aircraft. And so who's going to lift you in that space where you can be free and elegant and full of all of the options that are important to you? Well, he decided that he needed, based on that conversation, that he needed to stay in school for a year longer. He was chartered to go and do missionary work for a year after he graduated. And that isn't something he wanted to do. Well, you know, now it's 5 years later, he's a CPA. And when I was running for the school board, he wrote a note to the Daily Camera describing his story and saying, I have all of the options now. And I ask people, in all of those cases, success doesn't have to be something that somebody else prescribes. In fact, it has to be something you pick. And what that is number one, you're working with people who amplify your energy. You're working on projects where you know so much and you're inspired and you're curious that you become an innovator in that field and you're inventing. And you work in places where you have creative energy around you. And you're spontaneous and generous, and it brings out the best in you. You know, when you live life, that, to me, is the definition of success that we should chase. There is another school in particular I'd like to speak with you about, which is very inspiring in itself. It's called Teens Inc.
In Netherlands.
They do incredible work providing students the options to do what they want to do. In fact, this book did exactly what I wrote it for students in the school. They did a 1 week long study by themselves. They chose it. They did a week long study as a part of the TED program. And when we went back to listen to them, they said, why weren't we given this earlier in life? And why isn't this part of this type of conversation about our passions and mentoring and inspiring others a part of life? And they were very excited to do this. In fact, they're at an alternative school because they feel like they have all of these desires to want to contribute more, but didn't feel like there was structure enough in other places where they could be spontaneous and generous and growing and all of that.
For people who are listening who might be thinking, this all sounds wonderful, but my life is full of minimum wage jobs, scrambling to make ends meet. Where do I have space in my life to identify a passion, let alone work toward it? And where do I have the choice to choose a career that fulfills my passion when I'm just trying to make ends meet, support my family and live day to day? And that's the reality for a lot of people. How can they use your book?
Actually, Maeve, that this book is exactly to be a ladder for people who are in that situation to climb out. And it isn't hard because the book gives you confidence that everything that you need to make progress is within you. What we need to do is to recognize who we are, where we are, what our reality is, and then pay attention to what we can get to next. There are two tools that really help a great deal. One is what I call as a gratitude journal. No matter how hard your day is, at the end of the day, simply write down, I am grateful for this day because these things happened. Now, if things happened that day that weren't to your liking, write it down in this way to turn the corner and say, this was really hard. I hope I can find a way to do it better the next time. And when you go to sleep, scientifically, it's been proven that when you put your consciousness out there and your questions out there, the brain works on these to connect the dots.
and you start to see the light. The second thing is when you're focused on your clarity, you start to attract people. It's like when you buy a new Mercedes, you will see every new Mercedes on the road. When you identify your needs, you will start to attract people who have answers to the questions you have. And when you're in that positive mode of wanting to make progress, as I was describing, this happened to me many, many times, thrown into the oceans that I wasn't familiar with. When you're doing your level best to not only move forward, but you're also doing that with a clean heart and an intention to help others around you, then the world picks you up. And that's a good place to start.
The book is Find Your Everest Before Someone Chooses It For You. Raj Rawat, thank you.
Thank you.